Hi, my name's Simon Campbell.
And I'm Susie Starlight of the Starlight Campbell Band.
Welcome to a special edition of the Supertone Show.
Yardbirds and the Nazar Blue from the album Roger the Engineer.
Is that Wodger?
Oh, don't, yeah, free Wodger. And that was released on the 15th of July in 1966, a very good year, on the Columbia Graphophone Company record label in the UK, and on the 18th of July on Epic Records in the United States of America.
What's a graphophone?
I have no idea.
Well, this guy who we're featuring today on the special show is one of my particular favourites. You know, I've got favourite guitar players, but he probably is overall my favourite guy, even though I don't listen to him all the time. And of course, he was regarded very highly by Eric Clapton, Jimmy Page, close friends with Jimi Hendrix. And, you know, he's done so much over the years. He's a tour de force. And of course, we're talking about Jeff Beck here.
Yeah.
And you know, he has transformed electric guitar, there's no doubt. And what we're going to try and do through this show is that we're going to try and illustrate the different bits of his career, aren't we? And
yeah.
Just pull out stuff. We're going to talk a bit about gear. We're going to talk a little bit about, you know, his playing style and all that. But also his music, because the incredible thing is that he's made a great career and money out of basically doing instrumental music, because most of it's instrumental.
Yeah.
You know,
it's unusual, isn't it?
Yeah, and later on, he's done an incredible job. And what I do like about him as well is that he didn't play guitar for months at a time, and he's working on his hot rods and racers. And he must be, you know, using manual tools in cold conditions. Probably he's got heating in his garage, you know, of course he's got a lot of money. But, you know, it's like there's not a sort of thing you expect with a guitar player who wants to remain articulate, you know. If I do a bit of DIY, we have been doing for the past month, you know, my hands will feel like the claw, you know. But so how does he do it? But anyway, but, you know, it's but that track is remarkable in the fact it was featuring that feedback thing, which I'd never really heard before in that. I mean, it had been done because Hendrix was going to be doing it, and but not like that. And his figures and his lines and his guitar style is something, and his notes are something that are not rooted in the blues. There is a lot of blues things in there, like that, to which is a classic.
Yeah, you can hear that.
Yeah, you know, it's a classic line that everybody's been doing for years, you know, Peter Green, people like, and all those. But there are elements of it that are just different. They're not like Eric Clapton. They're not like Peter Green. They're not like Jimmy Page, actually. They're just slightly different, and they've got a certain thing.
Well, it's quite interesting as well, because I'm not a guitarist, I'm a bass player, and so I don't understand it and see it and feel it the same way you do. So between us, hopefully, we'll be able to sort of make some sense of it, because I find this fascinating going through some of his music, you know, because I just don't know that much about him. So, you know, I'm really, it's been an inspirational research, this.
Well, no, and I noticed, I mean, every time I see a picture of Jeff Beck, I always think of Nigel Tufnell.
Yeah. Well, apparently, he was based, apparently, they say that that the character is based on Jeff Beck.
Yeah, but he looks very much like him in the thing, and it always makes me laugh every time I see Jeff Beck, you know what I mean? But, you know, and I've actually seen him live more than any other guitar player. I've seen him four times, and we'll talk about it during the course of the show. Check out that panning. It's Jeff Beck Group, Shapes of Things, originally released as a single by the Yardbirds on the 20th of February 1966, where it came to number 3 in the UK singles charts. But Beck re-recorded this with his new band, the Jeff Beck Group, for his debut album, Truth, which was released on August 1968 by EMI Columbia in the UK and Epic in the United States. Recorded at Olympic Studios.
Oh, and, of course, here we go.
And Abbey Road. Engineered by Ken Scott.
Of course.
Yeah, that's right. And produced by Mickey Most.
Mickey Most. I mean, these are names blast from the past or what?
Ronnie Wood on bass. And on that album as well, featured Jimmy Page and John Paul Jones and various names of Dunbar. But it's Mickey War on drums, this one.
Rod Stewart on vocals.
Yeah, and Rod.
You can tell.
Rod the Mod. I mean. What a great track. You know? Yeah. And again, I think he did a far better version of it than the Yardbirds. I mean, you know, because the Yardbirds, it was very 60s and sort of psychedelic, but this has gone into progressive rock, you know? it's got that, it's real great. What a great thing going on, you know? Great groove he's got there.
What's really weird, right, is I'm listening to this track in a completely different way than I would normally listen to it. And I'm listening out for the guitar because we're featuring Jeff Beck. And it's just, it's firing out like I've taken some acid drug or something, like a rainbow of sound, because it's, when you listen out for it, it's incredible.
Well, he was using a Les Paul stage and a tone bender, you know, the old tone bender fuzz box. We've got one. We have a Supertone model of tone bender, which we use quite a bit.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's just a great sound. And but just talk to me a bit about Jeff Beck, because, you know.
I love this, Do you know what I was saying? I was saying, come on, let me do that This Is Your Life kind of style. It's like Jeffrey Arnold Beck. You were born on the 24th of June in 1944 to Arnold and Ethel Beck.
Ethel?
I know. At number 206, Demesne Road in Wallington, England. And what I love about this, right, he went to Wimbledon College of Art. Look, all these guys went to art college.
They did, yeah.
It was just like, and even like Tina Weymouth over in New York, everyone was at art college. And also, what I didn't realise that he was in a band with Screaming Lord Sutch and the Savages in 1962.
Correct.
Well, I didn't remember that. I wasn't around then. But after college, he was briefly employed, right, as a painter and decorator, a groundsman on a golf course, and a car paint sprayer. And what I love about this is great for sisterhood. His sister, Annetta, was the one that introduced him to Jimmy Page when they were both teenagers.
And they used to go around, that's right, because he used to go around Jimmy Page's house, because Jimmy Page was from like a middle-class family and he had like a tape machine and stuff. And I know that, and they used to listen to records and jam out. And it's a great story, that, you know, because I always think with Jeff Beck there's some animosity towards Page because of the success he had with Led Zeppelin, because Jeff Beck tried to do something very similar with this particular group, you know, with Rod Stewart, and it just didn't happen. And I think, you know, frankly, it's the songs. I mean, you know, Jimmy Page had some great songs, and they had Bonzo, and it was like a unit together, you know. This is more a collection of musicians. But it's a remarkable story, his journey. But, of course, if he had have had that success, commercial success, he'd have never gone on to do the stuff that he's
done. No, because when I've read interviews about him, he just comes across as if he just wants to be free agent.
Yeah.
That he doesn't want to be confined by the blues. He does want to, he's not a blues a guitarist.
No, he's not.
He's more, he explored sounds, and he's very passionate, and he wanted to be really honest with himself about that, you know? And you can tell as you read about his life that he's done some stuff, hasn't he?
Yeah, and, you know, and later on, you know, we're going to play some of the jazzier, rocker stuff he did, and that is, but he never really got into jazz per se. He's doing something completely different. Thank you.
Jeff Beck, and a song called Goodbye Pork Pie Hat from his third solo album, Wired, and that was released on Epic Records in May 1976.
Magnificent. That's all I've got to say about that. When I got the album, it just absolutely, that track blew my socks off. Literally, I couldn't do anything. I'd been listening to... I've been listening to Wishbone Ash and Clapton and well, Deep Purple, all these Blackmore, all these guitar players, you know, Jimmy Page. And then I heard this, I thought, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah.
How's he getting that sound? And this is the first time album he was doing with a Strat. I can't remember what he did Blow by Blow with a Strat, but he certainly did this one with a Strat. And you can hear his technique starting to develop. He's using his fingers. He's using the whammy bar. He's got that thing with it where he vibrates the whammy bar. He's got that sort of fuzz thing. He's got the volume control. And you can hear the single coil pickups being picked up in the studio. You can hear that that buzz in the background. It's great. Produced by George Martin. Mixed by Jeff Emmerich. No less.
Was Jeff on that?
He mixed the album.
Well, Blinkin' Nora.
He mixed it. And, you know, the marvellous, marvellous bass and drums on that. Absolutely gorgeous, you know.
I had to check out the bass player now, and there's a chap called Wilbur Bascom.
Yeah.
Or Bascom. And he's played with people like B.B. King, Grace Jones, Chuck Berry, and Michael Bolton.
Is that right?
Yeah.
He also plays with James Brown as well, did you know?
Yeah.
And Narada Michael Walden on drums. But, you know, just brilliant, absolutely beautiful.
Guess where it was recorded?
Abbey Road?
Air Studios. Oh, Air Studios, Trident Studios and Cherokee Studios in LA, the whole album anyway.
Right, Air, of course, that was George Martin's new
exactly.
place. Of course, yeah. Absolutely.
And Trident, though, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, cool. Well, just remarkable. And well, that's an old song by...
It was a jazz standard written by Charles Mingus, composed by him. And that was originally recorded by his sextet in 1959 and released on his album called Mingus R.M. I wonder if it's like Mingus R.M.
Yeah, well, Charlie Mingus, I mean, classic. And he did say, Jeff Beck, that George Martin had an amazing effect on him, didn't he? He said without him, he would have not had a massive career, you know, because he advised him. And to work with somebody of that calibre, he was just awed by, wasn't he?
Yeah, and I think that he could see where Jeff wanted to go. And also, I think between the two of them, they did go somewhere different that I don't think he would have gone without him, actually.
Yeah, but it seems, though, it sort of, you know, the previous album, Blow by Blow, sort of, it said it put him in a jazz rock type of thing, but it's still not jazz. It's on the edge of jazz.
It's fusion-ish.
But it's still got that thing. It's still got that rock thing. It's not, you know, it's not Mahavishnu Orchestra. It's not, you know, John McLaughlin. It's not, you know, that type of thing. It's something a lot more melodic than that.
Do you know, it's true, you know, and when you look at these personalities of the two of them as well, and you think about what they achieved together, I mean, I remember when I was at Salford Uni, we were just validating the degree course and George Martin came as the guest.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to meet him, actually, just because, well, I've got nothing to say to him, you know. I didn't know what to say to him. And my friend Tim met him, and Stan Hawkins, who's now professor of music in Norway, Oslo University in Norway.
Stan,
he was a great guy. Really got a lot of time for Stan. And so he was there hanging out with George. And what was interesting is when you read up about Jeff Beck and George, he looked quite aristocratic in his stance, but he wasn't.
Yeah.
And they had a joke as well. Like, apparently they were going to follow him one night just to see if he turned left into Buckingham Palace on the way home because they didn't believe him.
Well, it's a great story that once George Martin showed up at Jeff Beck's house for dinner with a massive bag of every classical record imaginable. And he said, "This is for you. Keep these and enjoy them and listen to the melodies and you'll have a career for 20 years. Your melodies are so expressive. This is a good move for you." There you go. Jeff Beck, Star Cycle, the opening track from his third studio album, There and Back, released in June 1980 through Epic Records, reached number 10 and number 21 in the US Billboard Jazz Albums and Billboard 200 charts.
Well, that's a bit different.
Well, I heard this on the tube.
Because, did you?
Yeah.
What were you doing on the tube?
There was a TV program.
Oh, the tube. I thought you meant the tube in London, as in Underground in 1980.
No, it was the TV program.
Right. Okay, yeah.
And I heard it, and I thought, wow, that can only be one person, Jeff Beck. And of course it was. I listened to the album, I bought it, and basically on that, it's all about Jan Hammer, because Jan Hammer, he did the drums and the keyboard on that, and you can hear it, those beautiful analog synths, you know, Sequence to Hell, fantastic, very 80s. And I went to see him, and I booked to see him on Saturday night.
After listening to this?
Well, yeah, I bought the album.
Right.
I booked to see him. I saw The Who on the Sunday night. I saw Jeff Beck with the Climax Blues Band on the Saturday night. And then on the Friday night, we were at a refectory, a student refectory, and saw Paul Young with what, the Q-Tips. That's right. So what an afternoon. A weekend of magnificent music. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. And after I saw Jeff Beck, I wanted to cut my hands off. I'm not kidding. I walked out of that gig, yeah. I'd never seen anything like it, ever. He played the blues at the end, and he didn't do one B.B. King lick. Not one lick I'd really ever heard before, and I just didn't know what to do. I actually cried. I broke down in tears. I was so emotional. It was unbelievable. I've never seen a gig like it. And you know, it was just absolutely remarkable. And that album there was produced again by Ken Scott, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and Jan Hammer, of course, he was with the Mahavishnu Orchestra before, and that is a bit more jazzy. But even so, it's got a really nice melody. It's got a melody to it. It's not just whittering stuff. And there's a lot of very fierce guitar playing there. But it's not out of the way. It's not scales that you just don't get. It's not so far out there that you just don't get it. I mean, it's not your particular type of music, that, I wouldn't have thought.
Well, it's of a time, of a flavour. No, not necessarily. What intrigues, I mean, but it is of a time, and I really understand that. What intrigues me is that when I was reading a comment about Ken Scott, who engineered it, the session or the album, saying that Jeff Beck didn't think he was good enough to be playing with the musicians that he'd got on the album, because he had Simon Phillips and Tony Hymas. Now, I didn't realise this, right? So Tony Hymas was a pianist that went to the Royal Academy of Music. He became the pianist for the Ballet Rambert, and then he ended up doing loads of sessions. And he went on with the drummer, Simon Phillips, and they got Jim Diamond on board, and they formed PhD.
That's right, yeah.
And I got the single, I Won't Let You Down.
No, is that
right?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. So that was just really, that's a real tangent for me. Just to think about, there were other bands that I know that are connected to Jeff Beck, and I did not know that they worked on this album with him. So that's been a real good revelation, really. But, I mean, what I like and what I really admire about him, and what I'm still trying to discover as we go on through the show, is, you know, it's him, and I don't know yet. I'm still trying to tune into the way that Jeff Beck plays, because he's a bit of a magician, isn't he?
Yeah, it's totally different, but it's his sound, you see, and it's the way he attacks the guitar, and he does attack it, you know. And sometimes he strokes it, and as we'll hear a bit later on, he strokes it, he teases it, and then he attacks it, you know.
Well, do you know what was interesting? Thank you for saying that, because what's interesting about the 80s and 90s is that he took a lot of time out, really. He didn't do a lot of albums at that time, Jeff Beck, and he was saying that he was listening to everything that was coming out, and he listened to Michael Jackson, and he thought he was fabulous, but it wasn't for him. And then he said that, you know, you had this kind of 80s rock and roll metal circus with Quiet Riot.
Ooh, yeah.
And he said the big hair thing in group is all with the same hair.
That's right, they did. It was
unbelievable. You can imagine that, though, can't you?
I can always, yeah.
So what he was saying is that, thank God I never went in there. He said the doors were closing on the possibility of him playing a sizable concert. So he said, it wasn't really selling, and it does you good not to be around for a bit, you know. You feel a bit refreshed.
Thank you.
Jeff Beck. And Where Were You, from his fifth studio album, Jeff Beck's Guitar Shop, with Terry Bozzio, and Tony Hymas. And that was released in October 1989 through Epic Records. And it went to number 49 in the US Billboard 200 and actually won the award for Best Rock Instrumental Performance at the 1919 Grammys.
I saw him in Manchester doing this at the Apollo. I cried. One of the reasons why I cried, I also again wanted to hack my hands off after I came out, but I didn't understand how he did what he did. I was watching him, but I was watching his fingers, and during the performance he uses a slide which he keeps in his waistcoat pocket.
Yeah.
And you always wonder why has he got a sort of dodgy way. Well, he puts his slide in there quite a bit. Or he did when he was losing slide, but now he tends to use his whammy bar, his vibrato arm, you know. And this is all done with the whammy bar. And his fingers and the volume pedal. I mean, it's just remarkable. It's a feat of actual skill in guitar playing. To get those notes, to keep it all in tune as you're playing it, is a feat in itself. I mean, it's a magnificent thing. But the sound and the emotion that it gives you. God, I literally broke down in tears at the gig. I couldn't believe it. Because I'd got the album and I thought, there's no way. How was he doing it? You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Unfortunately, I was halfway back. I wasn't close enough to really see. But anyway, there you are. Wow.
Yeah, I do. I actually like that track better. It's quite incredible. You actually don't realise he's playing a guitar. That's the thing. I think that's what I've realised, is that doesn't sound like a guitar.
No. No. And the beautiful, beautiful sound, you know, with Tony Hymas and those beautiful synth chords in the background, you know.
Yeah.
And on the rest of the album, so the drumming is absolutely furious because Terry Bozzio is a monster drummer. And live, it was just unbelievable because there was only three of them. There was no bass player. And it was just incredible, you know. Anyway, that's
well, I think that's something I've discovered now, is that actually that even though I think Jeff Beck's like a guitar player, for me, he doesn't play guitar. I don't know what he does, but he's got this thing that looks like a guitar, and it's almost like he's got a synth in his hand, or he's got different instruments. It's like an optical illusion.
But that's
something amazingly magical.
That's the great thing about him, you know. He is playing a guitar. It's actually using pretty basic equipment. I mean, you know, he always uses Marshalls. He used to use a Proco Rat distortion pedal at one stage. I think he was probably using it here. He uses a delay occasionally. There's a lot of delay and echo on that, and reverb and stuff. But it's all in his fingers. It's all in his fingers, and that's what it's about. And people, you know, you hear interviews with other people, and they say that, you know, if he picks up any guitar, it sounds like Jeff Beck. And it's the same with most guitar players. I mean, good guitar players that have got a style, they pick up a guitar and it does sound like them. But this is something else, you know. It's something stratospheric that you can't actually really, you know, get a hold of how he's gone here, how he's got there, you know? Amazing.
What I really liked about him as well, because this is great, by the way, because I'm discovering things and piecing things together as we chat live on the show, which is really helped me. Because, you know, when you've got a bit of a block and you're not really sure how to really appreciate someone.
Yeah.
When I read this article, I've been reading some interviews as well and not just going Wikipedia and doing the facts. I want to hear what he had to say. Mm. And he was asked in an interview at Rolling Stone magazine about, you know, his approach to soloing. And he actually just said, you know, I'm a very emotional person.
Mm.
And you can feel that in him. He said, you know, if he's got something on his mind, it would stop him from giving his best. And that's why he said it's not a good idea for people to kind of ring him up and ask him to sort of, you know, get them out of a deep well of doom with a bad track or something. You know, he was just saying that. And sometimes it's a really good cure for depression as well, though, too. On the other hand, when he was like playing with Tina Turner, to actually go in and see that you've got to work really intensely over a few days and you've got that bit of the track to do for your solo or whatever. And he said that's really helped him as well to sort of get out of himself in a way. But isn't that beautiful, really? That I mean, he's a human being, and I love the fact that he feels and you can hear it and wow.
Well, there's one track that, unfortunately, I forgot to put in the show.
No.
It's from the Honey Drippers, yeah, and it's Robert Plant and the Honey Drippers, and it's a track called Good Rockin' at Midnight. So listen to it on Spotify. You can get it on Spotify, I'm pretty sure. And he has a great guitar solo in that.
Really?
It's absolutely. Oh, it's awesome. It's just a quick, and apparently he rocked up with his Ampeg Reverber Rocket, stuck it on top of the piano, plugged his guitar in, did the solo, took about 7 or 8 minutes doing it, and then went again. Amazing. It's a great solo.
Emotionless this city life. Cruel it is, it clouds my eyes. The dark shades on my day. I live inside this place. I see only what I wanna see. I'll be only who I wanna be. Da-de-da-de. Da-de-da-de. My blanket covers me, yeah. Now as a youth, a man I was body bop, breaking on the line. Cheated in my liner for a pie and a biro, and I used to stand in line as I could sell my gyro. Now my ends are meeting in the best way that I don't got it. And the beast that goes boom. The music I consume to escape the doom and gloom. The beats and melodies keep realities at bay. But what happens when the record's gun starts to fade away? Alone within myself again.
Thank you.
da-da-da-da. My bank, it covers me, covers me, it covers me, covers me. One day I'll be only what I want to be.
Jeff Beck from the album Live at Ronnie Scott's. Firstly, Blanket with Imogen Heap and Cause We've Ended as Lovers, played over 5 nights at Ronnie Scott's Jazz Club in November 2008. And this is all live. Unbelievable. Jason Ribello on keyboards. The marvellous, my favourite drummer in the whole world, Vinnie Colaiuta on drums.
He is, isn't he? Yeah.
And Tal Welkenfeld on bass. What a fantastic solo. She's only 18 when she played this.
Stunning.
It's a stunning record. And it's all live. You can hear him using his volume control and his tone. At the beginning of the Imogen Heap one, it's too trebly and he turns and takes the tone right off and it goes dead dark. It's beautiful. It's magnificent.
Do you know what's really, I think this is the first time I really took note, seriously, yeah, with Jeff, because I'd bought Blanket with Imogen Heap and Urban Species back in 1998.
Yeah.
So 10 years later, she's singing that with him, and I absolutely adore that song. And there...
Well, we covered it.
I know, at One Night Stand on the Elf Man.
You were singing it, and I was playing guitar, and it was
so exciting.
Yeah, it was lovely, great.
So that song is beautiful, and I'm so glad we got that in the show, because I can relate to that, and I think it really encompasses the spectrum of what he's... It's a little tapas of everything that he's done.
Yeah.
And because we've ended as lovers, I mean, that's so beautiful.
Written by Stevie Wonder, of course.
That's weird.
Yeah. But I think that this actual performance encapsulates everything that's great about on the actual DVD, which is Deborah Blu-ray, it's definitely worth watching and buying and looking on YouTube or whatever, but buy it, you know, give him some money to the lad, you know.
Yeah. Eric Clapton's on it as well.
Yeah, Clapton's on it, and you know, he says, this is a man who knows his way around a Stratocaster. That's what Jeff Beck says, and then Eric Clapton walks in. It's absolutely great.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you want to go and see him live, he's playing with Rod Stewart at the Hollywood Bowl later on this year.
Yeah,
is it?
27th of September. I'd love to go to that gig.
That'd be amazing, yeah. Because old Rod as well, Rod the Mod, great. We listen to a lot of Rod, great. Anyway, so that's the end of the show.
So Jeff Beck, I think I know a little bit more about him now. And apparently he's been a vegetarian for nearly 50 years.
No, is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
He's very thin.
He is, isn't he? And he's got, his wife's called Sandra, and he's got two sheepdogs called Wilf and Paddy, and he lives with a ewe called Bubba and a crow called Dave.
No kids? Has he got kids?
I don't know.
You know, neither do I. Anyway, perhaps next time we can find out. But I hope you've enjoyed this, because I think it's one of those shows which is, it's a special. You know, last week we did the classical one, and the film's score, essentially. And, you know, I think we're going to do a few more specials. I quite like them. It's good.
It's really helped, actually, in terms of just helping me understand what guitar players listen to.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean, though?
Yeah.
Because it's almost like when you start playing any instrument, you kind of go, well, what's your role and who's out there? And but I think it boils down to the songs as well. For me, it always has to be the song.
Absolutely. And that's what it's all about. And that's the great thing. He does melodies, doesn't he?
Yeah.
It's a great thing.
And what I find out, just to finish off with, he was saying that, you know, the essential ingredients for his sound, he says, it's just total lunacy. He said the thing to do is forget that you're going to make a mistake and just go for it.
Yeah.
Which is a bit like you do that. Well, you play with like that anyway.
Well, thank you. You know, I wouldn't say I play like that, but I certainly
play like that. Flying across the country.